Right now, the Talk of the Nation opinion page. Unless you had your iPod turned up too loud, you already know that the album, Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band, just turned 40 years old. The Beatles released their concept album here in the U.S. June 2nd, 1967, and it was groundbreaking. One critic went so far as to describe it as a decisive moment in the history of Western civilization. It was as though suddenly rock and roll got respect. For at least one fan, it was a life-changing event. In an op-ed that ran in yesterday's New York Times, Amy Mann said that she had a love affair like no other with that record. Looking back, what made the Sgt. Pepper's album so different and what kind of effect did it have on you? Is the magic still there? And if not, what happened? 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. You can also email us, talk@npr.org. There's a conversation ongoing at our blog, npr.org/blogofthenation. Amy Mann is in our studios at NPR West. She's a Grammy Award-winning and Oscar-nominated singer and songwriter. Her latest album is called The Forgotten Arm, and thanks very much for coming in today.
Thanks for having me.
Now, you were just 8 years old when this album came out?
I think, it came out 40 years ago. I'm 46, so I think I got it a little later. You know, that it was, you know, I as I said in the the New York Times piece, my older brother was really the one responsible for bringing any cool music into the house, and I just absolutely had no knowledge of popular culture and music, you know, and I was totally not keyed into that at all. I mean, I think, you know, like Sound of Music was probably my favorite record.
So this must have been a revelation.
Totally. I mean, I think I was vaguely aware of the Beatles because he had had early Beatles records, but, you know, I didn't realize that this was a Beatles record. And when I heard it, I just, you know, it's just amazing. I mean, I think it's interesting that to like an 8-year-old kid, it can be, you know, it could be so completely appealing, you know, without any shred of like Beatlemania or like cute, you know, I didn't really even sort of realize that they were on the cover or focus on them. You know, like I kind of
because they were
care.
Just four of the many people on the cover.
Yeah. I didn't care. And they, you know, I probably thought that they were more historical figures or something. Like, I didn't really know, and I didn't pay attention. And I just really just listened to the music, and it was totally captivating.
And totally captivating without, obviously, at that age, getting all the references that they were making.
Yeah, clearly. Yeah, just beautiful melodies and great singing. And, you know, I also think, you know, like, I mean, this has been said before, but George Martin...
the producer.
His production is responsible for so much of that record and how, you know, the horns and the orchestration and, you know, what really makes it super interesting.
And super interesting, I would think, to a little kid even. I mean, as you described it in the piece, I mean, it was so bouncy and so flamboyant.
It's very colorful and jaunty and you know, lots of novelty. You know, I've been thinking about this recently, that people really like novelty and you know, there were novel kinds of sounds and that caught the ear in a really fun way.
Now, you mentioned your brother was the one who brought your older brother was the one who brought the hip music into the house. You, though, managed to smuggle this album out without his knowledge?
Oh, my God. He would have completely killed me. He would have. Yeah. In fact, I was talking to him about it yesterday, and, you know, I told him about the New York piece, and I was like, you know, I sort of mentioned that, you know, like how I took your record out to a friend's house, and he's like, well, I'm pretty sure I didn't give it to you, let you have it. I mean, that doesn't sound like me, you know, because, you know, he was quite a little tyrant when he was a kid.
Or weren't we all?
Yeah.
So you went to a friend, took it to a friend's house and just played it over and over again?
Yeah, I just loved it. I mean, it was, you know, it like has its own world. I think the fact that it's a concept album, like, really, and it's also like very circusy, you know, like it is so kid friendly, but not in that condescending kind of like wheels on the bus go round and round way. It's like the perfect children's record, if, you know, like for smart kids.
Even though, particularly on the second side of the album, the records came with two sides in those days, it does get pretty dark.
It does. I mean, I do, you know, most of my friends, my musician friends, like A Day in the Life is sort of the one of their favorite songs. And mm-hmm. I think that was my least favorite because I think it was creepy in a way that I didn't understand. I didn't understand what was going on. I mean, I still don't really understand what was going on, you know, that whole like...
I'm not sure we were meant to.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. It was all like kind of very nightmarish and mm-hmm. acid trippy and... you know, I mean, it was musically super interesting, but like, I think for a kid was like, kind of creeped me out for sure.
You also mentioned the other one. It's Getting Better All the Time. I used to get mad at my woman. I beat her and kept her apart from the things that she loved.
I know. And it took me a long time to, you know, when you're a kid, you kind of just like, you just bounce along and you don't really pay attention. And then, you know, one day I was like, wait a minute, I beat her? Like, that seems a little...
like, that seems a little extreme.
Surely the Billy Shears I know wouldn't have beat anyone, you know. I don't know, but then you just like, well, you know, I guess it's getting better. So
maybe
he didn't really beat her. Maybe it was just, you know, a figure of speech.
Yeah. And you also mentioned that at some point the magic of this record vanished or became too fragile for you to even look for it anymore.
You know, I think that it's you hear songs. I mean, all Beatles songs, you hear them so much. They're in commercials. They're all over the place. There's, you know, people cover them. It's really hard to... It's hard to get any distance and sort of maintain that, you know. I mean, the magic of music is very fragile. Like, you do wear it out. It's like reading your favorite book over and over. You kind of have to space it out. And, you know, so I really am afraid to return to that. But I have to say, just like hearing a fragment of that record, mm-hmm. it really just like, there's excitement and it's very, just the sonic quality, it's very exciting. Like, everything about it is exciting. And I have a feeling if I really sat down and listened to it that, you know, that excitement would be brought back to me.
We're speaking today on the Opinion Page with Amy Mann, whose op-ed on the Beatles' Sgt. Pepper's album was in the New York Times on Sunday. 800-989-8255 if you'd like to join us. 800-989-TALK. Email talk@npr.org. We'll start with Mike, and Mike's with us from northeastern Oregon.
Good morning, Neil.
Hi.
You know, I'm listening really interestingly over the phone to Amy's comments on Sgt. Pepper, and I am of the age, I'm actually 60, where the release of that album, I guess 40 years ago, it seems like a light year or light years, mm-hmm. was a major event. And I was in San Francisco, I'd returned there, actually I was in Berkeley, I was a student and then returned to Berkeley as a non-student, and I had a group of friends that were very much into music. And They pulled an anticlimactic move on us in San Francisco. One of the FM stations bootlegged a few songs off of Sgt. Pepper's and played it in advance of the actual release. But that didn't really dampen our enthusiasm a whole lot. We were really, really looking forward to this record.
Mm-hmm.
And so we got together. One of us bought it. I don't know who had the money for it. I can't remember which of us had the money to buy one, but we did. And we went to somebody's house. We achieved alternative states of mind to listen to it.
Uh-huh.
And we sat around and played it over and over again for a long time.
And when was the moment when you realized, you know, hey, this whole thing hangs together pretty well?
I think having heard bits and pieces of it earlier on the radio, and then after listening to it several times, it was a grand work. I guess that's the best way to put it. It was truly an accomplishment, because... Mm. The Beatles were representative to a lot of people of not just a couple of guys playing music, but of growth and change and the ability to become better at what you do and to express yourself better. And they really, 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 really did on that record. And although I don't think maybe if you break each song down individually, they all hold up, I certainly disagree with Amy on A Day in the Life. That's just an absolute, that song itself... to me, I think represents just absolute compassion for the human condition.
Hmm.
And that's what I got out of it and still do. But it's a wonderful, wonderful record and really did mean a lot to us at the time.
Hmm. Mike, thanks very much.
You betcha. Thank you.
There are, as we mentioned, it was the first real concept album like that, at least in rock and roll, Amy. And in a way, it's got a lot to answer for because every other rock and roll group out there felt the need to come out with at least one more concept album.
Yeah.
Some
yeah.
of which weren't quite as good.
Well, you know, it's a hard act to follow. I mean, you know, it's like that record really, really had it all. And one of the things I think is interesting about Sgt. Pepper's is that it was so, you know, kind of advanced and ahead of its time, but it also like had so many elements of like older, you know, kind of dance halls,
music hall stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, music hall stuff, like vaudeville kind of, you know, more old fashioned elements, and I think it was the mixing of that those you know modern and older elements that made it so interesting.
Let's get Mark on the line. Mark's with us from Portland.
Hi, Neil. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I should also say, welcome, Amy Mann. I saw her perform about 10 years ago at a local hall. They overpacked it out. They sold it out. It was a great performance by Amy.
Oh, thank you.
Her Body's Pan in Portland. It's interesting to hear, because of her age and different people, reflect on how it affected them by age. I was about not quite 13 at that time, and I had friends who were artist friends of mine, if we could call ourselves at that age. But I learned many years later that they were influenced by my brother and I making mock cardboard guitars and lip-syncing.
Awesome.
If this isn't a statement that life imitates art, which I think really became confirmed at this point without denial by many people, that it was later talked about in years that, of course, there's been so many great things said about the Beatles, I think it's almost hard to cover it again, but that they were probably the first statement in music that was existentialist, I think someone said, for a generation at their time. And I guess, I'm sure Amy would agree with this, that it was a, you know, it was a great impact on people, even at the younger ages. She was only 8 years old. I mean, as an eight-year-old, you said you didn't really understand who they were. Did you mean?
No, I really did. I mean, I thought, you know, that it was a band called Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Heart Club Band.
Oh, that was the actual band.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't focus. I totally missed the fact that they were the Beatles and that the Beatles were the Beatles that I had heard, you know, a couple of years earlier.
There was somebody new then, I see.
Or I didn't even, you know, to me it was like music just existed all on its own with no history and no context. You know, I mean, because I didn't listen to the radio and I was so young and you know, I didn't have friends saying like, oh, you got to hear this or you got to hear that. It was like, I was too young for that. It was really just, you know, like a piece of music kind of out of nowhere. And it's interesting because it's really that kind of like if a tree falls in the middle of the forest and, you know, like the devoid of any Beatlemania or, you know, in any of that kind of culture. You know, I mean, like, of course, if something's super popular, you know, like people will listen to it and be influenced by that. But you know, I mean, just totally on its own, thinking that it was like some band nobody else had heard of. You know, I mean, it's all about the music.
So you're only 6 years old at the time when they were first appearing on the Ed Sullivan Show. Maybe that is an epic point in musical history.
Yeah, Mark, thanks very much.
Okay, you're welcome. Thanks.
We're talking with Amy Mann about the release 40 years ago of Sgt. Pepper. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And here's an email we got from Rosemary in Baltimore. I have 4 young children. Although there's a sticker in the baby book for first steps and first word, I had to make up my own sticker for first time listening to Sgt. Pepper's.
Oh, that's adorable.
Let's see if we can get Bruce on the line. Bruce calling from Philadelphia.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
First of all, before I get into my comments on Sgt. Pepper, I wanted to just say thank you to Amy for appearing. I followed her since she was in Tool Tuesday, and That's Just the Way You Are is one of my favorite songs in the world.
Oh, thank you.
Sgt. Pepper's for me, you know, I was born in 1964, so it was part of the soundscape of my life. My family would listen to the radio all throughout the 60s, especially the late 60s, FM radio, where FM radio was completely different than it is today. And it wasn't until I inherited my aunt's records when she went into disco in like the 70s that I really realized what a great album was. I was 13 at the time, but I spent hours looking at the cover. And the touchstone of my kind of musical understanding was that album and probably the compilation albums, the Red and the Blue albums that the Beatles released later. But it was really part of the soundscape of the late 60s that you couldn't escape if you were growing up then.
Yeah, certainly inescapable. Bruce, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Here's an email from Michael. Amy, I heard you'll be part of the 40th anniversary Sgt. Pepper concerts at the Hollywood Bowl.
Yeah.
What song or parts of songs are you going to do? How did you choose? What song did you want to do that somebody already said had dibs on?
That hasn't really been decided. I'm not really sure what songs people have dibs on. I put my bid in for Rita and She's Leaving Home and one other one. I'm not, which I can't remember, but yeah, I think there's, you know, kind of like every song on that record is great, but you know, it's kind of hard to know which songs you'd be better singing. So I sort of thought maybe those would be appropriate, but yeah, I don't think that's been a, you know, and I'm also like, you know, fight it out. Like, I'll sing whatever they want me to sing. It's fine.
Okay.
Except for Day in the Life, which...
Except for the Day in the Life, which you have
which
objections
is too weird.
To. That's right. This one's from Allie in Indiana. Didn't Amy cover a Beatles song, Two of Us, with her husband for the I Am Sam movie soundtrack? Can she comment on this experience and why she chose it?
That was a request from the director that, you know, specifically that Michael and I do that song. And or maybe the music supervisor, whoever was getting the music together for that. And I think it was that movie had Beatles music all through it, and the director had not realized how difficult it was to get clearances for, you know, actual
for
Beatles
their performances.
Yeah. Yes.
You ought to talk to Apple computers about that.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
there's a whole convoluted sort of thing about the publishing on those songs, or you know, which I don't understand. And so they had asked us to do that, and we actually didn't realize that Michael's brother was in the movie until after we had done it. Just like, you know, nobody bothered to say, "Oh, by the way."
Oh, by the way. Well, Amy, man, thanks very much for being with us. Good luck with the concert and good luck with your album, The Forgotten Arm.
Thank you so much.
Amy Mann will be playing at the Hollywood Bowl, Sgt. Pepper's at 40, a Beatles celebration in August. For a link to her site or to her op-ed, you can check out our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington.